Welcome back to Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North. It is great to have you with us this morning. Jean Creighton joins me, as she does each month, to talk about things astronomical. And Jean, it is December, the end of the calendar year for sure, and we have a whole bunch of things to kind of go back over that we've talked about during the year. But let's start with something that could happen tomorrow, and that is the end of the world.
Indeed.
If we are to believe what people are saying about the Mayan calendar, tomorrow heralds the end of the world as we know it, Armageddon, whatever you want to call it. Let's talk about what the calendar actually says and how that connects to astronomy.
Okay. The Mayans are getting a lot of bad press about this, and I think it truly is not fair. The Mayans have a cyclical calendar. Unlike us, where we have a linear, we just add another day to the calendar and it just keeps going in perpetuity, I guess. For the Mayans, they had a cyclical calendar. In other words, the calendar that they used for special cultural events had, very much like an odometer, registers. And if you maxed out all the registers, which we will on the 21st of December, you go to zero again. So we start a new epoch. And as far as the Mayans are concerned, that doesn't mean that the end of the world has come. It just means that a whole new era will begin, and that signifies just a very special New Year's Eve.
So basically what we should be thinking about is just sort of a renewal.
That's right.
Rather than—
No ending.
No. Just a renewal. Okay. So hopefully tomorrow when this all happens, you and I will come back next month and we'll be talking as normal.
I'm quite confident about that.
That we will.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there have been a lot of things, of course, that have happened astronomically in the year. But one of the things that we want to talk about right now are alignments. And we're not talking about chiropractic alignments. We are talking about planetary alignments. We're talking about other heavenly body alignments. So tell me about what's going on.
Well, one of the things that people talk a lot about is the alignment of the sun with the center of the galaxy, as if this is something that we have never experienced before and somehow it's ominous. The fact of the matter is that as the Earth goes around the sun will appear to have different background stars behind it. Now, of course, keen listeners will think, how could we see stars behind the sun? And it's true, in broad daylight, the only star that you're going to see is the sun. But we know enough about the sky. We understand if you map the whole 360 degrees of the sky, if you know what's up at midnight, you can extrapolate what's up at noon. So we know what constellations the sun has in its background, even though we can't see them in the daytime. So because our relative position of the sun with respect to the background stars changes over the course of the year, the sun appears to have different background stars. And indeed, the constellations of the zodiac are those constellations that are crossed by the path of the sun. And the sun turns to be having Sagittarius in its background at the end of December. And Sagittarius happens to be in the direction of the center of our galaxy. But that has happened many hundreds of times before. So we know that we can survive this, presumably as we have in the past.
I have to ask, why are people saying that this is portending something ominous?
My best guess is that toward the center of our galaxy, we have a supermassive black hole. But we are so far away from that black hole that it is of no consequence to us.
We're not going to get sucked into it.
Definitely.
And that's
not
what people are thinking.
Well, I think there's some mystery about alignments, mysterious energies. I can't explain. I cannot justify these things. I'm just telling you what people say. But I'm thinking that maybe in the back of people's mind, they buy into this idea because they know that something interesting is lurking at the center of our galaxy. And there is, of course, a beautiful supermassive black hole.
So not to worry about it, though.
No.
What other alignments are going on?
Well, the very exciting alignment that has taken place already was that Venus managed to strategically get between Earth and the sun. And this was very special because it turns out that the orbit of Venus is a few degrees off being precisely the same with the orbit of the sun. So given the fact that our orbit is also a few degrees off, this is going to happen again in 2117. So this kind of alignment is rare. And we have understood a lot about our own planet, about how, for example, we observe exoplanets just by looking at Venus against the disk of the sun. Venus is closer, of course, to us than the sun is, but it is so small compared to our star that it looks like a little black fleck. And if you were lucky enough to see the transit of Venus this last June, you perhaps would feel the worldwide excitement about this event.
You also mentioned something before we got started about reversal of polarity, mm-hmm. which I said was a great band name.
Yes.
And so I think somebody should take that. But what are we talking about in astronomical terms?
The Earth's magnetic field is very complicated, and we don't fully understand it. But all our models suggest, and from data that we see, we think that the Earth's polarity changes over time. And on average, this happens every 300,000 years. And we see that even in rocks on our planet. We see evidence that this has happened. Seems like we haven't had this for about 700,000 years, so we are overdue. But this reversal does not happen overnight. It probably takes thousands of years to complete. And therefore, even if it started, let's say, on the 21st of December, we wouldn't know that the process has started. So that, I guess, in principle could start, but the chances that it would select that particular day are pretty slim.
Extrapolating out the several thousand years it would take to reverse polarity, what would that do if we were around to witness the end of the reversal, you know, the completion of the reversal? What would that do? What would we notice?
Well, I think we would notice a lot of confused birds, whales. I mean, we know that some animals very much have tied their biological clocks on the magnetic properties of the Earth's field. What exactly it will do to us, we are not sure. I don't know to what extent we understand the interaction between the magnetic field of the Earth and any biological processes. As far as I'm aware, but of course I'm not an expert, I don't believe that we know of any significant such interactions.
And of course, we'd have thousands of years to get used to it.
That's right. Since we know that this has happened before and life on Earth has been on the planet much longer than a few hundred thousand years, we must assume that given enough time, birds, whales, other animals can readjust.
One of the other things that we've talked about over the year is the fear that something gargantuan is going to hit the Earth and basically destroy life and everything as we know it. I know we have systems in place to look for asteroids and that sort of thing. What is the likelihood of something that big coming up on us so suddenly that we wouldn't know?
Depends on its size, Bonnie. At the moment, we track about 8,000 near-Earth objects, and those are larger than a kilometer across. A kilometer across would be a very large object. Just to give you, though, some reference and smile, I know that Hollywood takes
license to exaggerate.
To do whatever. I think in Armageddon, the object that was going to hit the Earth was the size of Texas. That would be truly catastrophic. And the efforts in the movie to break something like that would have been feeble, completely feeble. No way that we could break something like that with detonating of a little bit of nuclear bombs that just wouldn't do the trick. But having said that, even something a kilometer across would be sufficient, we think, to take out significant portions of the population on the planet. We all understand that needs to be tracked. Below 500 meters, we think, well, you know, chances are it would fall in the ocean. Probably we could get away with that. The intermediate zone, we think, could be quite dangerous, especially if it fell near a large city. But nobody is tracking these objects at the moment. One of the things we found out in the last couple of years is that there is, in fact, a smaller percentage of these objects between 500 meters and a kilometer than we originally guessed. Which is good, because we're not keeping track of them. So the chance that something really large would catch us by surprise are small. We would know at this point if something big is going to hit us tomorrow or the day after that or next week. So our hope is that if something is fairly large coming our way, that we would have enough notice. And when I say enough notice, I'm talking 15 years is nice because then you can make small adjustments to change the orbit just enough to make sure that it misses the Earth.
So that it just scoots by us.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, for example, to give you a specific situation, Apophis is an asteroid that is on a collision course with Earth in 1 to 40,000 chance, so very slim chance, in 2036. Last announcement was made about this. NASA said that if that chance isn't zero by 2020, they're going to send what they call an impactor, so a spacecraft that will push it a little bit just to make sure that it misses us.
So very unlikely that we're going to get crushed by a giant asteroid next week.
Very unlikely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I can go on with my New Year celebration.
Please do.
Okay. Lovely. To wrap up, instead of looking back now, we're looking a little ahead into 2013. We're going to get some interesting solar activity. Isn't that right?
We are. And that was part of the end of 2012 kind of scare that maybe the sun is going to send us, you know, some big burst of radiation and particles. The fact of the matter is that the sun continuously streams particles called the solar wind. These do become more intense as we reach the solar maximum, which we anticipate in May of 2013. So it is possible that we see more activity from the sun. And that is a concern if you're an astronaut. That is a concern if you're a pilot spending a lot of time by polar routes because you are more exposed to radiation. But for most people, this will probably mean a higher chance of seeing northern lights.
Oh, so there's some positive.
Yes.
Oh, how wonderful, because northern lights are just fantastic.
They are. And spring is one of the good times to see them anyway. So if you go to the NOAA website, so that's N-O-A-A, they will keep you abreast of when we have these large bursts called solar flares. And within usually 48 hours, that's when the particles actually get to the Earth. And that's when they spark up the northern lights.
Something to look forward to, besides Armageddon.
Yes.
Well, Jean, it has been a wonderful 2012. Have great holidays, and we will talk to you next year.
I look forward to it.
Lake Effect contributor Jean Creighton is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium, located on the campus of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. She plans to be back with us in January for another year of astronomical discussions. We'll take one last break, and then we'll talk with local author Paul Geenan about his book Schuster's and Gibbles, Milwaukee's Beloved Department Stores. That comes along right after this short break. You're listening to Lake Effect on WUWM.